the last one of these that I had, and I lost it. And she was like super upset.
So well, she'd tell her to chill the out. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Lee Pass and Chill. Holy shit, what a shot from Kawhi Leonard earlier today. We are recording this on... Don't laugh at me. We're recording this on a Monday afternoon, a few hours after Kawhi Leonard hit. Probably it's crazy to say that this was the craziest shot of the playoffs, considering we have already had a series-ending walk-off buzzer beater.
Sure.
But that's probably what it was. If you didn't see it, 4.2 seconds to go. Gets at the top, dribbles baseline at the buzzer, bounces four times, drops.
Mm. Are you taking into consideration context, like the importance of the game? Because the Lillard shot was like the fact that he knew that was going in from 38 feet was impressive.
That was impressive. Also, but, like game seven.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the conference finals.
Totally, the context of the entire sure. series as well.
Shooting over a 7-footer.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. I'm Olga Nulich. I was about to say I write about basketball for foxsports.com.au. I'm joined by, as usual, Guardian Natalovic. He also writes about basketball for foxsports.com.au.
Not today.
Not today. It's his day off. He came in. What yeah. a man. And Ted Smith and Harrison Pullinger are also here. They make videos for our website. If you watch the video of the Kawhi Leonard bucket today, Harrison made that.
Mm-hmm. Did you put on an English accent?
I did.
Oh.
No, I stupid it.
Harrison, either intentionally or like subconsciously, unintentionally or subconsciously maybe, puts on an English accent or a slight English accent in a lot of his videos when he does voiceovers.
Is this a new criticism? Because it's a strange place to...
I've brought this up before.
No, I have heard it a couple of times.
Just thought it was an
ambush. Very...
But meaning to speak to you about something.
We were talking about spirits before this podcast started. I feel like sometimes in the booth, like an old English grandmother, like takes over.
Grandmother as well. Not even a grandfather.
Because it's kind of gentle.
The Raptors are through to the conference finals. They will play the Milwaukee Bucks, who obviously defeated the Celtics in five games. Let's just quickly brush over what's happened to the teams that we're saying goodbye to. So today was obviously the Sixers, bye-bye Sixers. How many of those people that we saw on the court at the end of that game and on the sideline, how many of those are coming back, do we think?
I feel like, once they put that whole team together, I was like, okay, Butler's gone, Tobias Harris is going to be the third piece that stays. I feel like you go that close to be a game-winning shot in game seven, I feel like you've got to try and keep them together. And like obviously there's some financial aspects that need to come into play. People need to take pay cuts for that to happen. But surely the team look at that and go, Jimmy Butler saved us a lot. Tobias Harris was incredible sometimes. And, you know, you've got Simmons and Embiid there as well. I think you do have to try and keep it together.
I thought Tobias Harris would have been the pick coming into the playoffs in terms of if you're going to circle one of those free agents. We're talking about JJ Redick as well, Jimmy Butler. But Jimmy Butler in the fourth quarter of these playoffs has shown that he is the most likely to get you over the line in close games. And you're thinking back to when he first came to Philly as well, those fourth quarter buzzer beaters that he put down. He's the most big-time player in those crunch moments. So, but then Tobias Harris is the gel dude. He's the one that was keeping everyone happy towards the end of the season, and JJ Redick is the one that probably has to take a pay cut if they're going to try and keep everyone. He's going to be 35 this time next year.
Damn.
Still opens up the court. He's the indicator. If he's hitting threes, then it's like, well, Philly are either going to win or going to be in the game because he opens it up.
Yeah.
But if he's missing shots, it's over. So at 35, if he can still get that three ball off, then hopefully they can arrange something with all three of them.
And one of the other interesting things that I've found, especially through this series and the series before, was that Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid seem to be quite close friends now. They're doing press conferences together. They're usually, if a timeout's called, they go towards each other and then they move to the bench. I think that will have to play some kind of part in the decision as well. It's if, you know, your franchise center is being like, look, we need this guy to win, Pay him.
Yeah, I think going into the playoffs, as Ted said, it kind of seemed like Tobias Harris was the easy answer, yeah. right? But as we've seen with the Sixers team and as we discussed when Jimmy Butler first arrived, he provided that kind of that one guy that you can go to, that you can sort of rely upon in those big moments. But I think the conversation again is you have JJ Redick, who is your only truly reliable three-point shooter on that team. Tobias Harris shoots it at a decent enough clip. But you feel like if you've got Ben Simmons on the team and you've got Joel Embiid on the team, you need at least one more guy that can shoot around 40% from three on catch-and-shoot situations. And I think like it's another situation where end of games, you've got JJ Redick sprinting around the perimeter trying to get open for a three. And it's kind of because, like, who else is going to really take it? Jimmy's better off the dribble, it seems.
Yeah.
And late in games, they kind of get exposed again. And we saw that today in Game 7.
So they're probably, the Sixers are probably going to be in a situation where they can only pay one of them, right? They're going to offer Ben Simmons this max contract.
Yeah.
Right? So 5-year, 150 plus million. That's probably what he's going to get. He'll more than likely take it. They'll then have the opportunity to sign one of the two. Given everything we've just said, where Jimmy Butler is probably the most reliable guy when it comes to the big moment at important times. And then, but Tobias Harris is the guy who's that foreman that they really needed, who can stretch the floor, which you obviously want a guy who can stretch the floor when you have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons on your team. You know, if you had to pick, you can only pick one. Who do you pick? I think I'd go with Jimmy. I think he's more proven.
Yeah. Given what we've seen in the playoffs.
The only reason I would argue against Jimmy, and I'm not entirely sure whether I believe this or not, is that I think the only way Ben Simmons can go to the next level, and we've seen it at times throughout this playoff series, is when he's the guy and when he's relied upon and when he feels like he has a point to prove. I feel like when he's got too many people that he can rely upon, he often is just a little bit too hesitant to really get involved and really take over. You saw at the end of the game today, Ben Simmons barely touched the basketball.
Yeah, and when he did, there was no way he was even looking at the rim.
Exactly. And there's no denying his potential. And I think he's one of the most effective basketball players in the league when he's locked in. It seems a challenge for the Sixers to get him locked in consistently enough throughout the regular season and throughout the playoffs even. So I don't know if it's like, it probably shouldn't be the reason they do it, but I think we might see a different Ben Simmons if they say, this is your team, handle the ball, you are our point guard from minute 1 to minute 48. Like, this is your team to kind of guide, right?
So long term,
yeah,
you think Tobias is probably the better option,
right,
short term.
Exactly.
Maybe.
I think if Ben were to choose, I mean, I'm putting words in his mouth, but I think like it's easier for him to play his role with Tobias Harris than it is with Jimmy Butler.
All right, but the question is, okay, that scenario is better for Ben Simmons' progression as a basketball player,
yeah,
right? But does it make Philly more likely or less likely to win? And it depends on how much Ben Simmons improves. And there's a lot of weight being put on his shoulders already. He's still only in his second year of NBA basketball.
22.
So we'd expect him to improve. Hopefully he improves more next year than he did this year. He kind of stagnated, but he had some big playoff games. But on Simmons not touching the ball in the fourth quarter, that's pretty much on brand for Philly this year, right? It's been Jimmy Butler's team in the fourth quarter, 100%, and rightly so, as he's shown. He hardly hit, I think it's like 1 from 7 or 1 from 8 in the first half of this game, but his best quarter was the fourth quarter. So
yeah, no, I agree, except for that last 3 minutes where the Sixers just went to shit.
Yeah.
Basically. And on that, does Brett Brown come back? The talk before this game, and it was the same before this time last season too, that if the Sixers collapse, then Brett Brown's gone. No, they didn't collapse this season. They didn't really collapse last season either.
They were almost through, man.
They were a shot, like a weird shot away from going to overtime, potentially going through the conference finals.
Yeah.
Do we think Brett Brown ends up coming back? Do you think he should come back?
The conversation is silly, right? Because it shouldn't be, does Brett Brown come back or not because of this?
Right.
It like, as we said, it's a shot. It's 4 bounces on the rim and a ball dropping in.
It's mostly luck, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right? What you need to judge upon is what you think Brett Brown has done with this team and what you think he can do with this team. Has he done enough? I think there's an argument to be made that he hasn't. in terms of how he's like. You've got a player like Ben Simmons. You know, at least we think they're going to commit a whole lot of money and make him another, like, legitimize him being a cornerstone of that franchise
yeah.
with a max deal in the summer. Has he done enough with that guy to develop him and make him part of that offense, like, as a team going into the playoffs against the best teams in the league? Has he done enough, like, with Ben?
He had to contend with a lot of moving parts this year. Look at the roster yeah. that came into the season. Look at the one that we just saw play. A lot of moving parts. So from that standpoint, to get him to gel, to get him within a shot of the conference finals, that is a good effort. But you're absolutely right. In terms of player development, we didn't see it enough from Simmons. And
potentially Embiid as well.
And the players, like Embiid didn't have the right... Okay, he was sick, but for him to be so absent, I think if he was... Throughout the regular season, some of those games he still may have played if he was feeling ill, you'd expect a better output. For him to be so absent in those games that he played in the playoffs, some of that has to come down to game preparation as well. But I'd be okay either way. I can see why they'd keep him because they were so close to where they wanted to be, but also with Simmons putting up a similar stat line as to what he did in year one, that could be a detriment to Brown's future in Philly as well.
See, I don't like... Brett Brown at all. I really dislike him as a coach.
Next topic.
I dislike the way that you're not trying things till you get to the playoffs. You didn't put Ben as a screener until you get to the playoffs. I don't like some of the rotation choices that he makes, but when you look at what else is out there, what coaches are available, I don't know if you can get someone who is going to be better than that. Better than Brett Brown next year. I think there are some amazing coaches in the college level. You look at some of the smaller colleges that did really well in the March Madness. I think they're some really good coaches, but do you want to bring in a rookie coach with the types of personalities in this locker room? No. Yeah, so you need to actually find a coach that can manage three max players, and how many of them are out there?
It'd have to be a big-time college coach. Someone to be able to handle those personalities and the press.
No, I agree with that. And I wrote down who else. So, like, that was my point. Like, if you fire him, like, who else?
Yeah, they've missed out on the Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd duo.
Oh, no.
Oh, Ty Lue's still hanging for a five-year contract.
My heart.
The other thing is, and this could be on Ben Simmons, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier. He really just, it does seem to be a motivation thing with him. Like, he has a bad game, he gets slaughtered by US media, comes out in game six and looks awesome, doesn't turn the ball over, dominates from start to finish. Like, is that a criticism on Brett Brown that he hasn't been able to get, like, the best out of Ben Simmons? Not even, like in terms of, like, the tactics and drawing him up and putting him in the best positions, but literally just getting him to care.
I mean, yeah. LSU... We saw that Ben doesn't care.
Still look at his stat line in LSU.
Yeah, and like
it was elite.
His stats are insane, but you saw, and there were games he didn't want to go to class. He just didn't want to be involved in the college world at all.
He acknowledged that though.
Yeah.
He was like, I do not care about
it. He didn't go to
which
class.
Is fine, but there's another coach, which you got to cross off. Okay, can't motivate Ben Simmons. And then like you're going back to Oak Hill where he's this
Monteverde,
where he's this behemoth of a human being who just tore it apart. He didn't need to care to dominate. So it's like this is the first time where his motivation is actually going to affect his team. And I think we're seeing that it's not like it's not there, and I don't think we can blame Brett Brown for that all the time.
Again, to bring it, I know it's a tired point, but if Kawhi doesn't make that shot, we're talking about how good, Kawhi still put up numbers, but his defense on Kawhi Leonard improved throughout this series, I thought.
Yeah, Kawhi put up his numbers today on anyone that wasn't Ben Simmons pretty much.
He had to earn them, right? And if you look at Kawhi's fourth quarters, it wasn't until taking out the games that the Raptors lost, Kawhi Leonard was pretty quiet in the fourth quarters of those games, right? A lot of that's because of the defensive pressure Ben Simmons put on him throughout the first three quarters. Kawhi still got his points, but he had to earn them a lot more when you look at that. When you compare it to that blowout win that Toronto had in game one, where he was just putting up buckets, the ease of bucket was strong.
What a throwback.
Full circle shit, Ted. I like it.
So this is a disagreement that we've had. So Guardy and I think that Ben Simmons had a good game seven.
Yeah.
I think it was a very good game seven on both ends, right? Yeah. As in, I think on offense, he did what he could. He did the best with the looks he got.
When you take into account how hard he was working on defense, absolutely.
Sure. And I think defensively, he guarded Kawhi as well as anyone could.
Yeah.
And it showed today, especially. Throughout the series, he's done a good job, I think, as anyone could do against a guy who's making those sorts of shots. Harrison, why do you disagree?
Okay.
he wrote a list.
All right. If you have an all-star point guard, a number one pick, and their stat line at the end of the day, 13 points, 5 assists, 5 turnovers, and 5 personal fouls.
8 rebounds.
8 rebounds, sure. I mean, Kyle Lowry had 6, so it's like...
Yeah, 2 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter on the same play. That's
well, 3 and blocks as well.
You look at 3 or 4 blocks.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
He had 4, they took one away. 3 blocks.
3 blocks. Yeah. And you look at that and you go, okay, disappointing stat line.
Second-year player, you take it.
This is a guy that's meant to be like a top 10 talent, and that's what he gave. But that's not the part that really shits me, is that on the offensive end, it's like, okay, great, like he's such a good player when the ball's in his hands. When the ball's not in his hands, he floats around the low post and he doesn't do anything. And it's time and time again where he's just sitting there, everyone else is having to move, Embiid's sitting on the three-point line, and then he tries to get a rebound at the end. I don't like it, but then... The worst part of his game today, which cost the 76ers, and I actually say he cost the 76ers.
Brutal.
Is he does not box out. Their offensive rebounds.
I'll give him that.
The Lowry
two offensive.
Kawhi Leonard had 4 offensive rebounds.
Mm.
3 of them in the first half when Ben Simmons was marking him.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, fourth quarter, when the game's on the line, 2 offensive rebounds to Serge Ibaka, which he had to get switched onto because he was in foul trouble and couldn't mark Kawhi Leonard. So gets moved onto Serge Ibaka, who shouldn't be doing anything in game 7, fourth quarter.
Gives him
2 offensive rebounds, which gave them another 4 points. And then also, it's another thing which annoys me about Simmons. If you get to the second half and especially the fourth quarter, Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam don't need to mark him. That is an absolute disgrace that your 2 good wing defenders don't actually need to mark Ben Simmons, who we're saying had the best game on the 76ers. They put Serge Ibaka on him because he actually is not a threat offensively. If your best perimeter... your best perimeter player doesn't need to be marked by the best 2 perimeter defenders on the other team, you're going to have issues.
Right, but okay, just to refute that one point, I mean, that's not him deciding he's going to be playing off ball in the final minutes of the game. Like if Brett Brown decided to give Ben the basketball, one of them would be guarding him.
But,
right?
But what does he do in the half court which makes you say, okay, yeah, we need to put our best defenders on him? They don't. They pressured him on the inbound, and as soon as Jimmy Butler brought the ball up, they were inbounding JJ Redick sometimes. As soon as someone else has the ball, you're like, well, okay, cool. You're not a threat anymore.
Harrison hates Australia.
Look, I think you pointed out like things Ben did badly. I think on defense against Kawhi throughout the game, I mean, like I don't have the stats to back it up, but it certainly felt like whenever Ben was on Kawhi, he had a whole lot of trouble actually scoring the basketball.
And he had a couple of really standout defensive possessions on Kawhi, where he got turnovers on Kawhi. And Kawhi given that KD's out at the moment, that means Kawhi Leonard's probably the best player in the universe.
The other thing
him
is...
Him or the Greek Freak. So,
look,
he definitely... There were possessions where he did a great job and he made Kawhi's life really difficult. But Olgan came over and brought this up. He's like, yeah, but look at Kawhi's field goal percentage. He was 0-6 to start the game on almost wide open jumpers. So if you go, okay, let's take away those 6, you're starting to look at it and you're like, okay, he shot reasonably well. He got 41 points. He hit the game when he got 4 offensive rebounds. Ibaka then got offensive rebounds on him. Like, is that really enough to say... Yeah, Ben had a great game. I don't think so. I thought that was actually a really, really disappointing showing from him today.
I disagree, especially when you consider that we know what a poor showing from Simmons versus the Raptors looks like. Games four, games five.
Can we compare a game 7 to any other game? Like this is the time where like the great players.
I think he showed up. I think he showed up. He's only a second year player. He was marking the best player in the world, maybe. And in terms of him floating around the baseline, he'd earn some respite. It takes it out of you, Mark and Kawhi Leonard, for sure. So,
yeah, I think, like, you can say, like, Ben could have done this better and Ben could have done that better, but I definitely don't, like, I don't think it's fair to say Ben Simmons cost the 76ers today. I think there's a whole lot of things that went into this game, and I don't think Ben Simmons was at all the problem, like, at any point throughout the four quarters. I think the way they used him late in the game was a problem, but I don't think, like, Ben on the defensive end was anything but a huge asset for the Sixers. Because in the same way you talk about him being a point guard and a perimeter player that isn't great on the offensive end, he's a point guard guarding a wing throughout four quarters, one of the best players in the league. Like, there's no other point guard in the NBA that can do that.
And he did well when he got switched on Gasol a couple of times as well. So he can mark Kawhi and he can mark Gasol.
Well, I think Gasol, what's he really bringing at Gasol anymore? His lateral movement is shot.
Yeah, but Gasol in the post.
The size of him.
Gasol in the post was a monster. But like a monster compared to Ben Simmons.
You're talking 16 offensive rebounds for the Toronto Raptors, 5 for the 76ers.
Absolutely, that's way too many.
That's crap.
You can't blame that on your point guard,
bud. Six of them came because the guy Ben Simmons was meant to be boxing out, he wasn't boxing out. And that wasn't because he'd gone across to help. That was because he'd stopped and watched the ball go into the guy that he was meant to be boxing out. Like, that is stuff that you know, and it's whether you actually care enough to do anything about it or not.
I've worked out what's going on. For those of you who don't know, Harrison is the best actual basketball player on this podcast. 6'5", loves getting dirty in the post. Clearly just hates point guards, hates Steph Curry, hates Ben Simmons.
Hates fun. We've spoken about his hate of fun.
Hates Australia.
All right, so we've spoken about the Sixers for like an hour now.
For far too long.
Oh, way too long. We can all agree to disagree on that point just there. Do we even talk about the team that lost on the other side of the East? The Celtics?
The only thing we do bring up is after game one. So we all picked Bucks in 5, except for Olgan, who picked Celtics in 7.
Celtics in 7.
And after
my
game...
My man, Curry. Curry.
After game 1, Olgs took to Twitter. As
no, he didn't. Oh, he took the Paul Pierce route.
And did the whole...
No, I didn't go... You never go full Paul Pierce.
You did the whole, I was the only one that picked Celtics in 7. Smug face emoji. I just want to point out that series finished in 5 games.
As
Milwaukee
everyone
Bucks
else said.
Advanced, and Ogun sucks shit.
Brutal. After one game, that's so bold, bro.
I didn't. You said I picked.
We thought
it.
After that.
Come on, man. Just don't even bother.
We thought
just
after
don't
that
even
point,
bother.
It could be a series. It didn't end up being that way because the Celtics Celticed. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sorry, and it makes me even happier because not even happy, but like the Celtics are just. Remember, like, last year, it was like, oh, they got Gordon Hayward, that's cool. And then they've got Kyrie, and they got Al Horford, that's also cool. And look how deep they are. They're about to not have Kyrie, or maybe Al Horford. Mm. And Gordon Hayward is, like, a poor man's Joe Ingles. And, like, Marcus Smart, I don't think he stays.
Nah.
Terry Rozier
is not going to stay.
Oh, no, he's not.
Just after the game,
he's so angry.
He just said it. He's just like, yeah, I don't like it here.
Yeah.
It's not nice in Boston. They're about to get to a point potentially where Jason Tatum's their best player. And he hasn't shown to be that good.
Oh, I think he'll be better without Kyrie there.
Sure. Yeah.
You look at the Celtics last year, young, worked hard on defense.
Mm-hmm.
When Kyrie comes into that team at the start of this year, what we should have been asking is, is he the type of facilitator?
The start of the season.
Injury-wise.
Sorry.
Can Kawhi make this Celtics team and the individuals on there, can he make them better? And we should have been like, no, Kawhi doesn't have that in him. He's not the type of player that's going to improve other people's game.
Or at least he's never shown to be that person.
No, and then it's like, okay, how did the Cavs go when LeBron was out? They sucked.
Yeah.
Even though they had two all-stars, Love was an all-star at the time. Kyrie was an all-star at the time. Their winning percentage was below 40 without LeBron James. Their winning percentage with Kyrie this year was worse than it was without Kyrie this year. I've used this term before. He's not the tide to float the boats around him. He will not make other players better. So
he's just a big boat.
Yeah.
I think like Kyrie...
I was so proud of myself. You go. You have a thing to say.
Kyrie in Cleveland benefited from obviously playing next to LeBron, but also being that like Kobe-level NBA Twitter guy, like personality where if you were a fan of Kyrie, the clutch shots like made up for all these deficiencies, right?
Yeah.
You were like, oh, Kyrie hit that three over Steph, 3-1. Like that casual fan on Twitter thought Kyrie was probably the best point guard in the NBA.
Look at his handles.
Right, look at the handles and look at the clutch, yeah, right?
Uncle but Drew.
The thing is like a lot else goes into a game of basketball. Mm. And I think like for a lot of people that watched Kyrie consistently, they were like, he doesn't improve a lot of the players around him. He's a very talented offensive player who can get his own shot on every possession, essentially. But what is he going to do to improve the team? And as Ted said, we probably kind of should have known this was going to happen. Like, unless Brad Stevens, who has kind of gone from, like, the next best coach in NBA history to, like, is this guy
he's like going to keep his Saunders job? Now.
Yeah, which the is interesting.
Pete Buttigieg-looking man, I see.
Yeah.
You go.
So, like, he wasn't able to figure it out. And I think Kyrie's starting to figure out that he can't actually be that guy either. Like, I think he kind of figured it out halfway through the season when he started saying that stuff about like apologizing to LeBron.
Yeah.
And after this, like, I don't know if he feels like he can lead a team. I feel like he needs to be with another superstar.
At least one superstar. He needs to be with a guy that's going to get 30 points and another guy that's going to get 25 points. That's the way you get a win with this dude. It's not going to be by Kyrie bringing everyone together and making everyone else flourish. You just need guys that will score as many points or more than Kyrie.
My favorite part of this series was Harrison, every time the game was on, screaming at Kyrie to pass the basketball.
Every time. Yeah. That game five as well was like, that was art. Mm. That was just Kyrie shooting everything because I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That Mamba mentality.
Also, when before the season, when he had an announcement in front of all of the TD Garden. Mm. He's like, if you'll have me back, I'd like to re-sign here.
Yeah, so it's their fault that he won't re-sign because they currently do not want him.
Exactly.
Is that one of the most disappointing NBA seasons in, like, I don't know, in my memory at least? Like, in terms of where the expectations were going into the season, it was like they're so far and away the Eastern Conference favorites. Like, they're going to face the Warriors.
This was – so I went back and watched – an interview I did with Ben Simmons, and I told him, "Hey,
Humblebrag, yeah.
Weird flex, but okay.
He's a reporter." And my question to him was, like, "Is it just you and the Celtics now? Are you guys ready to be like the two top teams in the East as the rivalry?" Because before the season started, that was everyone's thought process that it's the Celtics and Sixers now, and we'll see what the other teams can do.
Mm.
And then it just turned out not to be those two teams, and that's very weird.
Yeah.
So Celtics are out. We have Bucks, Raptors, Giannis versus Kawhi. What, two of the top three best players in the world right now? Is it safe to say that, I guess?
Let's see what Steph does in the next series, but yeah, I'd say that.
I'm going to...
That just yeah, for sure.
You, absolutely.
You agree with... Okay.
They've been probably the two best, barring KD, the two best players, two of the three best players in the playoffs so far, at least, but like, in terms of effectiveness.
This Steph Curry that we're about to see isn't shackled by having KD next to him. So we're going to get to see what Steph Curry still has as an individual that doesn't have to rely on the actual best player in the world.
Sure. I agree with that. But yeah, Kawhi Giannis, I think that'll be a really fun matchup. I think they probably guard each other on both ends,
mm-hmm.
which would be really, really sick because Kawhi seemingly can score over anybody and Giannis can drive through anybody. I wonder if Kawhi can score over like a 6'11 guard, basically.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Giannis can drive through the alien that's Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Those mid-range jumpers that he was just seemed to like go down the floor and be like, I'm going to get this short little step back and take in this series.
Yeah.
Surely you're not going to be able to do that over Giannis's wingspan.
And everyone else's length too.
Yeah, like, he's just, as Ted says, he's an alien.
So what's the X factor for each team? So if Toronto are going to win, who's going to have to be the catalyst for that to happen? Given that we know what Kawhi is going to give you between 25 and 35 points, he's going to have to work hard for him against the Greek Freak, but he's going to get that.
I think the only possible answer could be Pascal Siakam, surely.
Who was terrible today.
Who was so open. So, yeah. Like, they were in his head.
They left him open.
Yeah. I think even the same when Harrison pointed out that Kawhi Leonard missed his first six shots today. Now, I think that was a tactic adopted after game six because they were leaving them open and they missed so many shots. It's like, let's see if they're still in a funk. And Siakam's probably been in a funk for what, three games?
Well, from game two onwards, basically.
Yeah, okay.
From game two onwards, they put Joel on him and they just let him shoot and he looks like
he forgot the season he just had. Like, he looks like he's like, oh, I'm not that good. I can't make these shots anymore.
Really, I actually so just strange. Think that in no situation ever would he have to come up against 7-1, like, decent lateral quickness and long, one of the best shot blockers in the NBA. I think that's a huge part of it. Whereas all regular season, there was no real scouting report on him because he just exploded. So it was, well, his work ethic's insane. His motor never stops moving. And we don't actually know if he's got no shot. Whereas in this series, they went, okay, you shoot it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to drive it, you got to drive into Embiid.
Yeah.
Brooke Lopez can't do that this series.
No.
Who else would Ilyasova, I mean, you can only take so many charges. And Mirotic, I think, is too slow to guard him. So they're actually probably going to need to put Middleton.
Yeah. When was the last time the Bucks succeeded or really defended really well a team with two wings? Two really good wings. Because they don't really have a dude, unless they put Eric Bledsoe on him.
And but like Bledsoe, Lowry, surely?
Sure, like that's the expectation. Bledsoe, obviously, is on Ted's point, is probably my X factor. The Bledsoe-Lowry matchup. We're assuming that Brogdon doesn't start as well.
Mm.
But I like that Bledsoe-Lowry matchup just because they're two little bulldogs, super strong. And I just think Larry's been not good throughout the entire playoffs.
He played all right today.
He was okay today. I still hate him as a player.
Hate is so strong.
Because every time he drives into the lane, he flops.
He looks for a foul. He doesn't try to finish the basket, man. It's annoying.
Like, so much credit to the officiating crew throughout this entire series for never calling it, which is like unheard of, but he just flops every time. And Eric Bledsoe has been pretty inconsistent throughout this playoff so far. So I want to see that matchup, and I think that could be not the thing that decides it, but I think that'll be a really big factor.
Yeah, I could be way off, like way, way off, but I just think this is going to be a little bit more comfortable for the Bucks than most people are predicting.
Yeah, I disagree.
Yeah, like, and I think most people would. I think most people are kind of expecting this to maybe go 6 or 7. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this finishes in 5 or 6. I just think what the Bucks are doing at the moment is so hard to stop. And I didn't see anything from Toronto in this Philly series that made me think that they have enough to get past the Bucks team that have done it pretty easy to this point. They got past Detroit like as easily as you could. Got a little bit shocked when Boston were like a tad better than Detroit in game one. And then we're like, all right, now we'll turn it on. And went 4-0 from there. I just think this Milwaukee Bucks team is just so bloody good.
And I think they're prepared as well. The fact that they didn't panic after losing game one, they said, what changes are you going to make? And they said, absolutely nothing. We're not going to change anything. And for that formula, to have faith in your formula and for that to pay dividends, it means that if Toronto come out guns blazing, lose and beat the Bucks in game one, it won't affect the Bucks at all. But if the Bucks can win game one and win it handsomely, there's a chance Guardy might be right.
Yeah, I tending to agree with Guardy. I think we've all seen it that you need a team to defend Giannis. And like, yes, Kawhi is an incredible defender, but at some point you need help and you need four guys to just crash down on him. And the four guys that are crashing down from Boston, in my opinion, are better than the four guys that are going to be trying to help out defensively from Toronto. I think without OG Anunoby, you're going a very, very lean Pascal Siakam, who he's just going to bull rush.
And then like a little Danny Green.
Danny Green, who was has been...
Puss.
Yeah, god-awful.
Puss.
Gasol's too slow for him. Lowry's too small for him. I don't know. I feel like he's going to be able to have his way quite comfortably.
Sure. Yeah. I get that argument. I think to put a button on this series, something that's always interesting to see is when you have a defensive player of the year in Kawhi Leonard guarding Giannis, and then at the rim you have another defensive player of the year in Marc Gasol. So I think that's a good place to start as far as guarding Giannis.
Mm.
You have the best perimeter defender in the NBA and one of the best you know, inside defenders.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if Gasol's not,
I guess he's not.
If he's not on the Greg freak, then he needs to be on the perimeter because there's so many 3-point shooters. You know, if he's Mark and Mirotić in that situation,
that's why Brook Lopez. That's why Brook Lopez changed this team.
Yeah.
The other thing is
such a weird sentence.
Is quickly is like we've spoken about how good Giannis has been, but he hasn't had to really get out of first or second gear, like essentially throughout the playoffs. Like the Bucks as a team have put the Detroit Pistons first and then Boston Celtics to the sword.
Might have just been that second game in that conference semis against the Celtics. Yeah, other than that,
he hasn't like needed to really be the superstar, even though like he's put up crazy numbers because he's a crazy good basketball player.
Yeah. 6 or 7 minute spurt.
Yeah. I think we could see him just like turn it on.
Like he did every game versus Philly this year.
Yeah. And the other thing that somewhat worries me about Toronto is, yes, they got the job done against the Sixers, but the crowd and the players felt like they were giving the game away and they were giving the series away and it was going to happen all over again. And yes, Kawhi Leonard stepped up and they got the win. But I don't feel like that's going to – like the Sixers are probably the only team worse at throwing away games than the Raptors. Like I think the Bucks just play winning basketball and I don't see them kind of – I guess throwing away leads or going 5 minutes without a basket or all of the things that the Sixers did throughout the series. I think the Bucks get the job done.
Let's call it. How many games?
5.
Bucks in 5.
Yeah.
Bucks in 6.
Yeah.
Harrison?
Bucks in 6.
It's a safe money.
I'm going bold.
Raptors in 6.
Which means
just waiting
us
for that
three
game one
are
tweet.
Right.
Raptors in 6. I don't know how long we've gone for. We spoke so much about this.
Feels like a while.
We still have another series to talk about.
Let's do that.
Just at the end of this episode, by the way, we have a packet of Pringles here that's called, it says mystery flavor. So it's like a white and gray package with a question mark on it. We're going to try it at the end of the show and just see what flavor it is.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How exciting.
Could be like wild chicken flavored.
What? That's sour cream and onion.
Yeah. Whoa.
The Western Conference Finals. We are going to have the Warriors against the Trailblazers. The Blazers beat the Nuggets today. Nikola Jokic missed a free throw at the end of the game. That was the end of the Nuggets season. We're not going to have KD potentially for the first game, and you know who knows when we'll get him back. The reporting is that he might come back in this series. He's got a calf strain. And DeMarcus Cousins apparently could come back during this series too. He tore his quad and apparently he's going to come back pretty soon, which is incredible.
Yep. Modern science, right? Yeah.
And also money. He wants to earn a contract.
This is true. In game 6 of the Western Conference semis, we saw a really cool OG Warriors get it done against the Rockets. Steph Curry blew up in the second half, dropped 33 points just to sink the Rockets. Dame versus Steph. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, what was Dame's output by the end of the game? I know he stunk it up big time in the first half.
In today's game?
Yeah.
So game 7 today against the Nuggets, I think he had 13 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, something like that. He did not shoot the ball well.
It bodes well.
CJ McCollum's doing
it. It bodes well for Portland. I think if their best player can score 13 points and it doesn't equate in them losing, and they can still go through to the conference finals with Lillard having an offensive output like that, it means that Portland can beat you in more than one way. But also good luck.
Yeah, I think my whole thing was like when KD went down with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter, game 5, and the game, I think they went into the fourth tied, or it might have been like a 2-point difference or something. That from then on, that was the Warriors' biggest test in terms of getting to the NBA Finals, in my opinion. Having to close out game 5, which they did, and then go on the road and beat the Rockets in game 6. Like, I don't think they're going to struggle like that against the Blazers, or if the Nuggets had gotten to the Western Conference Finals, the Nuggets. I think they're just a kind of a class above, and even without KD, I don't see how the Warriors lose this series. I think, Dame vs. Steph is fun, but in the past, Dame vs. Steph has ended only one way when it's really mattered, and that's the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry in the upper hand.
And that's the thing. You look at this last series and Gary Harris did a brilliant job on Damian Lillard. He actually made life really difficult for him when I certainly thought he was going to go nuts on that Denver backcourt after his series in Oklahoma. Klay Thompson is well above Gary Harris as a defender and is going to make Dame or CJ play him a lot harder. I can't see what the Portland backcourt is going to be able to carry through. And then, like, your wings, you got Aminu and Harkless. What are they going to bring to the table at all?
I mean, this has been a series, like, for Portland where, like, they've had, like, huge contributions from, like, the likes of Rodney Hood. Like
Evan Turner today.
Like, I mean, sure, it's great, but, like, does that repeat against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals? Like, I'm not so sure about that.
Especially seeing Rodney Hood might not be even ready.
Yeah, he couldn't put power or too much power on that.
It was a hyperextension of the left knee.
And Portland, given their recent history, this probably feels like a win of a season already.
Oh, yeah.
They've already accomplished.
Conference Finals is big.
Yeah. So that could go either one of two ways. They can kind of put the feather in their cap prematurely and the Warriors go out and win this in four or five, or they play with, for lack of a better term, gay abandon and just shoot from the hip. that's a phrase from like the 50s. Sure,
yeah.
And
do we still use it today?
I don't know.
Oh, this just in, I just did. So if they just shoot from the hip, they're free will, and because they have no pressure, if somehow that can turn into a win in this first game, then the series becomes interesting. But it's going to feel like a cakewalk if the Warriors rock up to Oracle Game 1 and win this by the time the third quarter's done.
You know who was awesome in this series, though? For the Game 6 and Game 7, Zach Collins.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Zach Collins.
Oh, Zach Collins, one of the best. Ben Simmons
he
sucks.
He was.
But elite. Zach Collins, 9 blocks across the last two games.
No, Zach Collins was super effective. But that again, it's just
blocks.
Like you...
That's
you,
a lot of blocks.
You just kind of wonder like how many of those guys, they're like... positive impacts on this series translates against the Golden State Warriors. And also you look at what the Warriors were able to do in games 5 and 6 and who contributed. Like Andre Iguodala is looking as good as he has in the past like 3 years. Like his shot is falling and he's looking super springy.
He's never been more rested.
Yeah.
Like he's hasn't had such a big role in the regular season. Like this is his time now. He's primed.
He's just a sharpshooter now, too, apparently.
He's been so good for them in that Western Conference semifinals. Obviously, Klay started to find his shot. Draymond's like I think been like so effective for them. So and then you have Steph who like had pretty much one of his worst playoff series ever, like in his career against the Rockets, but was able to turn it on when it mattered most. When KD went out and they needed someone in game 5, he turned it on. And in the second half against the Rockets on the road in Houston, where that's going to be as tough as it gets for the Warriors, like he managed to turn it around and win the game and win the series for them.
Just on that point, he responded to critics that had been saying that he was struggling with his effort. And given that he sucked in that first half, for him to turn around and have his most successful fourth quarter in his career.
Mm.
Think about that.
Think of his career.
Surely
it was an effort, though. Like, it didn't seem like it was effort. It just seemed like nothing would drop for him.
Yeah.
He's quietly going about his business in the fourth quarter throughout this series. 76 straight free throws in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
I tell myself I'm ready for the NBL if I make 8 down the line. it's not easy, right? In the biggest stage against your arch enemy, your current arch enemy in the Rockets, home or away, 76 straight is a big deal when you consider how close some of those games were as well.
Do we think any – so there was a point entering the Trailblazers-Nuggets series where we thought, no Nurkic, Jokic is going to go to work. Jokic did go to work. He's probably been the most consistent and productive player in the playoffs. It didn't really make too much of a difference, obviously, when it comes to the outcome. Does the Trailblazers still have a lot of depth in the front court? Does that affect this series at all? When you look at Enes Kanter and Zach Collins and even Myers Leonard, I'm going to use his name, as guys who could do anything against a relatively, I don't say non-existent Warriors front court because Kevon Looney's been sneaky good, but do you think they make any sort of impact? Like, who guards Enes Kanter, for example, and who can do that effectively? I'm not saying
you
he's
get, probably put Draymond on him. Or
20 minutes out of him.
I'm not saying he's the difference maker, but I'm saying that like there's a guy there who they can't really. I don't think they match up too well.
At the same time, it's like, so I think the Warriors are happy to go. You get Enes Kanter and what he provides on offense. We get to play him on defense.
Yeah,
like we're happy with that trade off.
Put Kanter in any pick and roll with Draymond Green, and that's
That's where, and I know I talk about him way too much, but that's where Zach Collins is actually going to be a huge difference, and you saw it towards the back of this series where they were just like it was screen and roll both ends of the floor. It was let's put Jokic in a screen and roll and let's put Kanter in a screen and roll and our guards are just going to kill it. They're going to make the decision. When you go to Zach Collins, who is nimble, is a great defender, has a really nice feel for the game, he slowed Murray down a lot when they switched, and I think he will play a part in being able to at least contest shots that Steph and Clay will put up, but it doesn't matter.
But it's also like you're looking at Jamal Murray versus Steph Curry. It's like it's that little bit of like, I mean, apart from the huge talent gap, you're looking at like the veteran savvy and the playoff calls and the respect he gets from the refs and whatnot. He probably doesn't get much respect, Steph, but if Steph is over his bloody layup yips, which he had throughout that Western Conference semifinals, because he was getting into the rim like pretty open and missing some bad layoffs, if he can just kind of get the job done. Zach Collins could help, but I don't.
Oh, no, sorry. In that, I wasn't comparing Murray to Curry. I was comparing Kanter to Collins.
Right.
Whereas in a screen and roll, Collins is going to offer much more help than what Enes Kanter will. So I don't think the Warriors care too much whether Kanter's on the floor or not.
Yeah,
if he's off the floor, it's going to be a good thing.
Right. Any defensive scenario,
you
would rather Collins than Kanter.
Yeah.
That's just a no-brainer. That will be interesting to see how he goes.
Stud.
And chill. I saw a tweet today, which I laughed at. Zach Collins will now have been in as many conference finals as Chris Paul.
Oh.
Okay. How do we think the Rockets look next year?
I think they're paying Chris Paul like an ungodly amount of money.
I don't think they'll be able to get rid of that contract either.
Oh, no. No one wants Chris Paul for lots of reasons.
Yeah, they don't want sluggish Chris Paul. No.
Right. Or just like bratty Chris Paul. Do you want that dude as the leader of your team if you have some really promising young players?
No, he's a jerk.
No, he's like he's shit to watch.
Yeah.
And like, and you can tell, I'm sure he might be a good leader in the locker room, sure. And he seems like a good dad, et cetera. But just on the court, he's just not a guy who is going to lead a team that anyone respects.
I'm glad you're not taking a shot at him as a parent.
His kid's lovely.
This is what you expected from him in year three of this contract. Like, I remember when it came out and they were like, the Houston Rockets are paying him four years.
Yeah, it was too many.
Yeah. Chris Paul.
Yeah. Always felt like that.
First year of Chris Paul looks terrible.
Does James Harden make a conference finals ever again?
Well, probably.
I think we have to wait to see after Chris Paul's contract.
I think we also have to wait and see what happens with the Warriors.
Yeah.
It's true.
Because Nuggets are coming up, but like what happens with the Warriors, like if they're still that number one entering the playoffs where everyone's just like, oh, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
I do wonder though, and again, we're kind of going on a little tangent on the Warriors now, but let's say KD doesn't come back. Right, they're going to offer Clay the max. That they should do that because you should want to keep the Splash Brothers together.
Or if they don't, someone will.
Right, and so let's say he gets the max. KD, let's say he leaves. You have this whole bunch of money here that you don't need another superstar. You can get a dude who can play next to the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green, and then you can actually get a bench because you don't have a bench currently. I wonder if that. I don't know if it's going to be better because obviously Kevin Durant is arguably the best player in the world, but that's still a team that's still the best team in the West.
It'll be different, you know? Yeah. Like, it'll be back to the OG Warriors with Steph Curry.
But, like, imagine if Harrison Barnes could shoot consistently.
Right, and it's also just, like, a Steph Curry and Klay Thompson who are more experienced and have, like,
they've proven
more playoff experience under their belt. Like, when they started, like, right at the start when they were, like, winning titles, they didn't have much playoff experience. Like, that 2015 title was like, that was pretty like baby-faced Steph Curry.
It was their second year in the playoffs.
No, I agree.
No, didn't they get bounced by like that grit and grind Memphis? Then they got bounced by San Antonio and then they
Through. Maybe 2 years. I just remember they didn't have much success in terms of playoff wins Jackson. That was the previous coach, right?
Mark Jackson.
Yeah.
I feel like that goes to the question of how successful James Harden is over the next like 2 or 3 years.
Well, they won't be able to get much help given their current contract situation.
Well, yeah, plus
it'll
the
be
Clippers.
The same. It'll be the same
plus
lineup.
Plus the Nuggets.
What the Clippers could do, the Nuggets, see what happens in
LA
in the with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
There's
and if the Kings make a move, they've got the ingredients for a good team down there as
plus
well.
Plus Andrew Wiggins in Minnesota. This is the year he's going to take.
That's Harrison with a joke.
Also, I know I mentioned it, but like we're talking about the Rockets. With 2 minutes to go in the third quarter in game five, that's the widest the NBA has ever been, like in the past couple years since KD got to the Warriors. Like that was the door. If there was a door, that was the door. Like the Rockets to take game five and finish the series in game six. Like, that was
Steph Curry slammed that door.
Well, it's also that James Harden and Chris Paul didn't walk through it. Like James Harden in game six was not good.
Yeah.
One shot in the last 8 minutes and 24 seconds.
Dang, and that was a layup too. He made it. Well done.
Yeah. It's something he had over Steph in that game anyway.
So Warriors and Blazers, West, this is still where we're at. The season series between the regular season series was 2-2. Dame Lillard showed up in Oakland because that's where he's from. And this is also the second last series we're going to have at Oracle.
Mm.
What are we calling?
Warriors in four.
Dang. You're not even giving them anything.
I'm going to say five. I think Portland get one.
I think I feel like the right answer might be five, but I think it could be four. I just like the Warriors are so used to kicking Portland out of the playoffs at this point. Like,
and I think they're gonna relish the opportunity to play without KD. I think they're excited about that proposition.
Yeah,
I'm almost the opposite. Where I'm not gonna go crazy. Trailblazers in eight.
That would be actually crazy.
Yes. I think they're gonna cherish the moment, but one of the games they're gonna get caught out. So I'm with Harrison. I got Warriors in five.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's responsible.
Safe money.
So to finish off, right before we get to the Pringles, let's just all cherish the fact that this second round of the playoffs, where we had really the only series that was kind of boring was the Bucks-Celtics one. The other ones we had two game sevens, one of which came down to Kawhi's ridiculous shot. The other one was between two like underdoggy kind of teams. And then the underdog team technically went through. And then the other one was between the Warriors and
the
Rockets.
Best rivalry in basketball.
Right, where you've got these two teams that are both like gritty, they both go at each other, and then an injury happens and it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Then the OG Warriors show up. Like, this was a really, really cool series. Like, this is one of the best series overall that I think we've seen.
Yeah.
You'll get no arguments.
I'm having fun.
I'm having a lot of fun. It's been a great playoffs.
Yeah. Big time. And considering LeBron hasn't been in it, which, you know, some people may have been sketchy.
He's just been tweeting. That's all.
You can tell like his pre-wine tweets and his post-wine tweets. It's pretty great.
It's time for Pringles.
Okay.
Are we doing this on the pod?
Yeah, I'm starving.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do it.
May I, Harrison?
Yeah, go for it.
As in, like, you're about to hear some crunching, I think. Are we moving the microphone?
Is it ASMR shit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People make, like, serious money from that. Vegemite. Maybe that's our second podcast. I smell it. What is it?
It's chicken. Can we?
What?
Chicken?
Is it really?
You called it.
We're going to make a concerted effort for you, our listeners, to not eat into the like directly into the microphones.
I reckon that's chicken. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
It was a mystery because the packet's grey, but it's not like, whoa, it's not going to sweep you off your feet. It's chicken.
Wait,
it's chicken.
There's a bit of something. Wait, does it? Oh, that's not the flavor, sweet and savory. Is it?
No. That's chicken.
They're delicious.
But like, how do you actually find out what the flavor is?
You scan it for more codes, more clues. Scan the code for more clues.
I don't think you need to scan it.
Find your first clue in the word search here. Oh my God.
It'd be better if it was a riddle.
You guys talk, I'll try to find a word.
I want riddles.
Okay, we'll talk.
Onion. I found the word onion.
Okay.
Actually?
Yeah, I swear. Look, there.
I can confirm it says onion.
Actually? Where does it say it?
Man, I just nailed that word search.
Where does it, as it says on these thing here?
That's something like year five elitist.
I'm not sure how long that'll take you to find, but we should probably prioritize wrapping up the podcast.
Yeah. I found the word NBL and I found, in my mind, I thought I found Johnion. It says onion. I got it.
It's Johnion flavor.
Yeah, okay. That's me in our podcast. That's League Plus and Chill. Thanks so much for joining us. If you like what you heard, go on your favorite podcast app, rate, review, subscribe, all that.
Hey,
jazz.
Write us a funny review, and then if it's actually funny, we'll read it out on the next podcast.
And as was said before, feel free to attack us personally. Just tap the 5 stars though. Tap the 5 stars and tell me what
you want.
More ASMR
content
with Ben Simmons being crap today.
Wow.
Harrison needs anyone.
Harrison's burning the Australian flag in the corner over there.
Yeah, we're going to make him hand in his passport tomorrow.
Down with point guards.
So, yeah, if you like what you heard, follow us on social medias. We're at Fox Basketball. Search our names if you want to find us individually on Twitter. Bye.
Bye.